This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or podcast, number 100 in the series for Franklin Matters. This specifically is the eighth and final one in the series of eight audio segments recorded during the informational session on the new high school. This forum was conducted by the school building committee and held at the Horace Mann Auditorium on Thursday, November 17th, 2011. This eighth and final segment continues the question and answer period with Tom Mercer, School Building Committee Chair, Jim Jordan, partner and owner of AI3 Architects, Sean Fennell, the project manager, School Superintendent Maureen Sabalinski, providing answers to the questions, Andrew Shagnon of AI3, I believe, joins to answer the traffic questions during the course of the discussion. The questions in specific covered during this segment: teachers end up cutting off the HVAC because it interferes with the class. Is the noise in the room something you are planning for? Can you tell us about the technology? Wireless, we assume, but what is there in the cutting edge? Are you going to use a virtual desktop? Can you facilitate the traffic situation? I don't want to minimize the traffic situation. It hasn't been done right at any of the schools. And final question, what are you going to do with the 4th of July fireworks? So, without further ado, here's the recording from Thursday evening, November 17th.
Can you tell us about the technology, wireless, clearly, right? But can you go on and tell us about the technology? Like cutting edge stuff.
No. Before we get to that point, let me ask you one question kind of related. Teachers want to teach in a classroom, obviously. And the number of teachers I've spoken to, they seem to complain about noise levels. And they end up turning off their univet in order to teach, regardless of the technology going on. So they end up passing the flu to one another and this, that, and the other. So is there any new requirements or any conversations regarding classroom teaching and noise?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good question.
And then let's parlay back to what type of technology is going to teach.
There's a lot of technology embedded in every classroom to make it optimal for teaching and delivering education in the classrooms. We hire a consultant, and they're part of our design team, the Centech out of Boston. They're acoustical engineers. They specifically look at every classroom space. Every classroom space has to meet a certain noise decibel level to meet Green School requirements and LEED certification. That's 40 decibels. When they look intensively at the classroom as we design it, they take into consideration noise being emitted from light fixtures, fluorescent bulbs that give off a noise. They look at the mechanical systems, how much noise they give off. The school that we're designing will not have the unit ventilators that you're referring to up against the wall on the floor. It's all overhead forced air systems. So that does generate some noise, and they take that into account. The close proximity of rooftop units emit noise through the ductwork. They take that into consideration. Some classrooms are going to be closer to those rooftop units than others. The classrooms that are closer, they look at the ductwork being supplied to those spaces, and they recommend a certain distance of duct silencer material to be placed on those ducts. Every classroom space is looked at individually to ensure that it meets the LEED Green School requirement for acoustical spaces. In each classroom, there's a lot of technology embedded in there so that it helps acoustics and students with hearing disabilities and impairments. Every classroom is outfitted with 4 ceiling speakers equally distributed throughout the space. The teacher will have the option to wear a necklace that's a voice amplification system, and their voice will be amplified over those 4 speakers in each classroom. If a student has a severe hearing disability, they could wear a headset, where the teacher's voice amplification necklace will go through that headset via FM frequency and amplify her sound to that student's headset. So that's for a severe case in a hearing problem in a classroom. Every classroom is designed with an interactive marker board, interactive whiteboard, I should say. Every teacher station has a built-in piece of casework up against the wall adjacent to the 8-foot interactive whiteboard. We call it a teacher facilitator station. It's a place where they could dock their laptop, have wireless access, each facilitator station has a document scanner camera associated with it. So if they're holding a book or a picture, they place it right under this camera. It's immediately projected over the LCD projector onto the whiteboard, where they can take an image of it and start manipulating that image. So every classroom has that. There's a digital clock in every classroom. There is obviously a phone in every classroom. The amount of access teachers have to the outside or within each other is determined and programmed in the system, and that's a district decision. The ceiling tiles are engineered in the classrooms. They have to have a certain noise absorbing factor. I could go on for a lot more things, but the whole school will be outfitted to receive wireless. There's a number of wireless access points in each classroom and throughout the common area. So if you choose to go to a laptop per student initiative like Natick High School just did, that can happen anywhere in the school. And it's also hardwired as well. So the teacher has the option of keeping her desk and her teaching station next to the interactive whiteboard. And we're looking at opportunities where they can move their teacher desk to the back of the room if they choose, and be able to wirelessly connect to the LCD projector so they could have options of where they move their teacher desk. We're investigating that. That's a new feature we're incorporating into the model school. There won't be TVs on carts and VCRs on carts or anything like that. We're doing all web-based IPTV system, it's called. So there'll be a central location where DVDs and information is uploaded to a server. When the teachers at their facilitator station can pick a movie or an educational video to show from their laptop, touch on that icon, and immediately start to play in their classroom over the interactive whiteboard. They could snap images from that and distribute it and create class assignments and post it immediately to the web. So it's extremely interactive, extremely high-tech, but it's also designed so that it's extremely user-friendly. And this IPTV system is easy enough to use. We found studies and have been involved with research that showed you could put all this technology into a classroom, but if it's not easily energized and accessible to teachers, they won't use it. So it's got to be easy, user-friendly, and readily available so that instantaneously it can be energized and used for educational purposes.
Thank you.
We have a budget for technology on the order of $1,200 a student, which works out to about $2 million for a loose technology.
Yes. Are you going to have virtual desktops? Like, instead of having a physical computer, like a thin client, and have a server, would that be more cost-effective?
To be determined. We just had our first technology kickoff meeting. There was a lot of great discussions and ideas in that meeting. The narrative that we had kind of put together as a basis of design, we're going to be elaborating on that in the months to come, but it was something that we had to put in as part of that first submittal to the state, so they have a rough idea of what we're trying to incorporate into each classroom, into the facility in general. So that's a work in progress, and we have a lot of conversations to have with Maureen and Peter as we move forward, and also the district technology person that you have, Mr. Raposa. So.
Yes.
Can you give us a little
hint
on the traffic scenario?
Well, Jim can have that one.
It's a great time to get Andrew Chagnon involved. He drove a long distance from Foxborough, so we'll let him field that question.
You can go over to the frame if you want.
Yeah, I think I'm okay. We have performed traffic counts for the site, looking at traffic for the site. We have determined which way traffic comes to the site in the morning. And we are looking for opportunities to make some changes if it's possible. One of the original things that we wanted to try to do was possibly eliminate one of these two roads and make this two-way traffic on one road and eliminate the other one. However, when we did the traffic study, one of the things that we found out was that the volume of traffic that goes through there, we would actually need to widen this road significantly and add turning lanes to be able to move the amount of traffic through there that goes through there. So right now, we're reevaluating this, and it looks like we may be keeping this horseshoe configuration open. We're looking at dropping students off in this area and in this area in the back. We understand that there's a significant amount of traffic that comes from Panther Way, not just from Oak. We want to offer opportunities where students can be dropped off both at the front and then exit, or at the back and then exit back out. The buses will be circulating through and dropping off in front of the school here, and then we'll be able to go directly over and drop off here for We are looking, and this rendering doesn't indicate it here, but we are looking for opportunities maybe to reduce the number of curb cuts that are here, so that access to the parking lot in front of the school would be off one of the interior roadways, as opposed to having so many curb cuts close together right there along the roadway. It is something that we'll be talking about more. Certainly, if there are traffic concerns, parents drop off their kids. We know that you guys know where the traffic concerns are. We'd be happy to hear about those things. We want to make sure that we do everything that we can to try to address them.
One of the things that we'd also do during the construction phase of the project, we probably cut this access off and use that access just for construction, so that we can do more construction vehicles anywhere in either school facility.
Just to add a little bit on top of that, and again, this is a little bit further up from where we are, but one of the things that we'll develop as part of the project is a full phasing plan for how the project works during each phase of the project, how this building gets constructed adjacent to your existing building without interfering with the ongoing operations. We're making provisions for ongoing operations, safe student access, vehicular access to the existing school. Then as you transition over to when you start using the new school, demolition of the school, construction of the remaining fields, all of that will be phased out. It usually ends up being somewhere between 4 and 7 phases, depending on how it works, so that everybody can see how is this going to operate, how are we going to access the school during construction, how are we going to access the school in the interim period, and then when it's completed.
I don't want to minimize that just because you look at the traffic backing up right in the middle of Clayton Street getting into, I think it's Keller
Solid
Stretch. And then even with Randy Jefferson, people will just use the loop, they can cut the parking lot throughout the block. It's never been done right at any of the schools. You know, this is, you have 1,600 people going to this school, right? So,
and a lot drive there.
It
certainly is a challenge. As I said, as we move forward, we want to find opportunities to make it as convenient as we can for people. You know, one of the things that we're up against all the time with our designs is sometimes, as good as our design intentions are, when somebody's in a rush, they're going to pull into that parking lot and drop somebody off regardless if there's someplace else accessible.
So we want to try to make these, try to make this as convenient as possible so that people are encouraged to use the areas that they're supposed to.
Any other questions?
We're going to do the 4th of July fireworks.
Your house.
Yeah.
Again, thank you one and all for coming out. We'll be doing this obviously many more times. Please tell your friends any questions you have along the way. We have the website up. My name and information is up there. Jefferson's up there. Thank you.
I hope you've had the time to listen to the prior 7 parts of this series. If you haven't, the links will be available. I do encourage you to listen to all 8 to get the complete story. Again, this is the first of a series of informational sessions, but it provides an awful lot of information in these 8 segments, and I hope you do take advantage of that. While this podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, I can use your help. How can you help, you ask? If you like this, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. This feedback loop is important. Thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008 and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.